I think emotional intelligence is important because there is going to be chaos. And if you are freaking out and spazzing out when there's chaos surrounding you, then everybody else is going to figure that out. And they are also going to be freaking out.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we're joined by Sid Crist, the Director of Basketball Operations at Winthrop University. Sid has worked his way up through the college basketball ranks with stops at Fairmont State, the University of Charleston, West Virginia Wesleyan, the University of Pikeville, and now Winthrop. Along the way, he's gained experience in multiple assistant and operations roles, learning what it takes to add value wherever you are. In this episode, we discuss how young assistants can create more opportunities early in their careers, how building and maintaining a strong network helps you grow in this business, and the key skills that allow someone to excel in the director of basketball operations roles. Please welcome to the podcast, Sid Crist. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. Welcome back, coaches. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Your host, Alan Major, Doug Caputo. Today, we're happy to be able to have the opportunity. The gentleman who is the Director of Basketball Operations at Winthrop University. Kill place. It's absolutely been killing it. Great location, great school. We got some high remarks. Ladies and gentlemen, Coach Sid Crist. Coach Crist, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, man.
First, I know you mentioned it. You're going to talk on it, but I want to make sure to give a shout-out. Coach Dwayne Osborne, the man who was able to connect us, who was able to get us the opportunity to be able to chat with you. I know you have some great experiences and things that we'll go over here shortly, but I want to make sure to give him a shout-out because without him, we wouldn't have had this opportunity. So shout-out to Coach Osborne there. But really what we do in just true typical Rising Coaches fashion, we like to bring you back ultimately to – the beginning and what kind of built up to where you are now, being the Dobo at Winthrop. And you have worked your way up a lot of different roles, but what part of that journey, you know, those early on steps, those things that you had to go through, the mud, the tough things that you had to do, what were some of the things that taught you the most that you feel really helped you in this current role?
Yeah, I would say the first thing that comes to mind is the first job. So I played at Glenville State Division II for a year. I was a very bad player. I had no business on a college basketball court. Wanted to coach college hoops. My dad was a high school coach and teacher for 30 years. And Glenville was about an hour and 15 minutes from where I grew up. My dad was a graduate of Glenville State. The guy that was the head coach there was a gentleman by the name of Stephen Dye. And Coach Dye actually played in high school at Marsh Fork High School, which was in the same region as Mount Hope High School, which is where my dad was the head coach. And so they had some battles. So I knew who Stephen Dye was from when I was 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. And then Joe Mazzulla and Rob Summers were the assistant coaches at Glenville at that time. And so for a Welsh kid from a super small town, like going there and getting to play for those three dudes, Coach Dye, who I was super familiar with, and then Coach Mazzulla, who I watched play in the Final Four, and as a huge West Virginia fan, it was a no-brainer for me. And so after 1 year, I went to play college basketball with the mindset that I was doing that to become a college basketball coach. And after the first year I was there, Coach Mazzulla left Glenville to go to Fairmont State to work for Jared Calhoun. And he just told me, hey, if this is what you want to do long term, you should just go ahead and start now. Like, why wait and play for 3 more years if you could go ahead and get your foot in the door? So I left playing and transferred from Glenville to Fairmont State and was a student assistant for 3 years. And so when I asked that question, the first thing that comes to mind is the first job. Seeing Coach Calhoun and Coach Mazzulla and Coach Molinari and Manny Robinson, who's now at Utah State with those guys, watching them approach their every day and watching how dialed in they were to their jobs and what their responsibilities were, you know, that was huge for me just in a development stage early on in my career because I saw the level of intentionality that was required to be really good. And then the second thing that comes to mind is I was fired. I was fired at West Virginia Wesleyan 8 years ago. And having that taken away from me, working in a car wash. Yeah, I worked at a car wash in my hometown for 2 or 3 months while I was trying to figure out what the next step was. And those two things taught me the most because everywhere you go, every place that you work, I've worked at 3 years, was a year at the University of Charleston with Coach Osborne, was a year at West Virginia Wesleyan, all those schools, obviously in West Virginia, and then spent the last 7 years at the University of Pikeville before learning this job. So I've been at a bunch of different places. Everywhere has their own challenges. And oftentimes we get caught in this mode of just complaining about the issues that we have at the school that we're at. And when you're knee deep in water trying to unclog a drain in a car wash, it makes you thankful that you get to deal with those issues.
Your humility has jumped right through the screen from the start, man. And I think you might be a groundbreaking guest on this show. Here's why. We've had guys go from jobs, one job to another, and you had players go from one school to another. You are the first guy that we've had on this show that's transferred from a player to become a coach.
That is definitely use the term player lightly now. Like, I'm 5'9" and slow. I can shoot it, but like, I wasn't great. I saw the writing on the wall. I'll tell you what, you'll like this. We played West Virginia in an exhibition game my freshman year. I get it like 3 minutes to go. And it had Jawan Staten was the point guard. And I shoot a three, I think, from the top of the key or slot, whatever it was, and it hits long. And Dennis Colicchio goes up and rebounds it 5-6 feet above everybody else, and he rebounds it, and he outlets it to Staten. And so I'm backpedaling, and I'm probably like halfway between half court and the three-point line. And like, he just in and out, right foot, right hand layup, and before I realized what had happened, he was already running back on defense, and it hit me right there in that moment, like, it's over. This ain't for me. It's not where I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to be over on the bench coaching these kids, not out here trying to play.
that's a coyote roadrunner moment right there.
Literally before I could move my feet, he was gone. Like, was okay.
But you were on a roster. So the bottom line is that's still, honestly, for this show, that is unique. Literally going from a player to a coach during your career. Over 200 episodes, you're the first person we've had.
Other thing about that too that was great was, and this is probably the thing, I'm 32 years old, but this is my 12th year in this. And the first year I was there, like, I didn't really do anything. I was just there running the clock, whatever, just doing whatever was required. But going into that second year, like, they threw me right to the wolves. Like, they gave me all the op stuff. I was in every single meeting. Like, I was with them. I essentially lived with Missoula, and there was about a eight-month stretch where I lived with Coach Molinari. Like, I was with those guys all the time, so they included me in everything that they did, and it was great for me because while I was in a manager type of role, like, I was getting to coach. I was getting to do coaching things, and getting that opportunity at 21 years old, 22, that experience was unbelievably beneficial, especially at the level at which we were winning. The last 2 years, I was there for 3 years. The first year, we didn't make the national tournament, but year two and year three, we make the national tournament. And then the year after I left, they end up getting beat in the national championship game. And it shows you, I think the last year that I was there, I think we were ranked number two in the country for the first, whatever it was, 8 weeks of the season or whatever. West Liberty was number one. We were number two. Mm-hmm. We were both 14-0 going into the West Liberty game at home, in which they beat us. Up until that point, both teams were 14-0. So getting the opportunity to have my hands on in what we were doing that early in a program that was winning at that level, like, that was crucial for me and my personal development and the overall success of the career that I've had. I've been able to hang on to those years and getting jobs like Utah State, like, they're killing it. Like, when he got the job at Fairmont State, it was not a good job. When he left the job at Fairmont State, it's one of the two best jobs in the league. He gets a job at Youngstown, not a great job at that time. When he leaves that job, it's one of the better jobs in the league. Missoula being on that staff, Coach Molinari, who actually had been here at Winthrop with Greg Marshall and Randy Peel, man, like, that staff was unbelievable. Like, those guys were fantastic. It was huge for me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Love it, man.
Now, let me ask this. This is something that kind of stands out to me, and I feel like we know the answer, but for just maybe people who are listening, or maybe there's something else. But you said the first year you had more of the managerial role, and then that second year, they gave you more adobo and a lot more responsibility. What changed from that first year to that second year for them to be able to give you more responsibility? Was there something that you were doing? Did they just feel more comfortable with you?
Yeah, I would say I was available. Like, I was always there. Coach Missoula was huge for me because he didn't allow me to not do it. Not doing it is easy. Not being here is easy. Not being available is easy. Not watching the tape is easy when you're in that role. And so he just took me with him. Like, he took me with him from Glenville to Fairmont. He took me with him when he went recruiting. He took me with him to dinner. He took me with him everywhere that he went. And there's three things that guy does. It's hoops, his family, and his faith. And if you're with him, he's doing one of those three things. And he just made me do it. And I say made me, like, I wanted to do it.
Yeah,
I was just with him. Come on, we're going to do this, or come on, we're going here, or come on, I need you to drive. We're going to Cincinnati to watch this kid play. Like, you're going to drive me, whatever. And I was just with him. And we had a couple GAs when I was at Pikeville that, hey, Hattie, what's the best job or whatever? And like, I told all of those dudes this, like, just exist. If you can just exist in this business, at some point in time, you're going to get your break. You're going to get an opportunity. You're going to get a job. Existing is the hardest part. You got to work for free. You got to be a GA. You got to be a volunteer. You've got to be a part-time assistant. Like, you got to do some of those things. And it's a difficult thing to do, but if it's what you want to do and you can stay in it and you can exist in the space, at some point in time, you're going to get an opportunity.
Yeah, no, that's so good, man. Yeah. I know what the distinction you were making there is, like, Coach Mazzullo is an influencer. I know people use that word in social media because it's easy dropping videos and stuff, but literally that's what he was for you. It wasn't like he made you do it, but his influence and who he was and the person he was. Sure. It just, some people draw you in to their wake. It's like the back of a boat when a boat just has those same thing.
He and I have similar childhood backgrounds. Some of the things that you go through or whatever growing up, and his dad was a coach, my dad was a coach, and that we were drawn together, I think, because of that. That was a huge piece of this. And he taught me two things and three things. Work ethic being number one, right? Like, he just, and for him, it's not really work. He loves doing it. Like, it's the thing that he enjoys doing the most. So it's not necessarily work. Number two was the importance of relationships, and that's all that matters. If you hear any of those guys that played for him in the Celtics, you talk to any dude that played for him when he was the head coach at Fairmont, any dude that played for him when he was an assistant at Fairmont, not one guy's going to have anything bad to say about him because the relationships that he builds are genuine. And then the third thing was he taught me to be me. Like, all that stuff you guys see on social media, the interview, like, that is who he is. Mm-hmm. That's not a facade. That's not, like, that is exactly right. What that dude is.
Right.
And I think people can, players especially, they're very impressionable, but they also know when someone is fake. They know when you're phony. They know when you're trying to be somebody that you aren't. And
that's right.
The reason why you would be able to hear positive things about him from the guys that have played for him is because he is exactly who he is. And all of that is real.
Yeah, no, you're right. He's not trying to, people would tease Popovich about some of the answers he gives and things like that in some of those interviews, but that's literally who he is.
Sure.
No, you've had some great influences in an incredibly, well, I won't say short period of time. To be able to be in this business 12 years at your age, that alone is a huge deal, man. You literally got jump-started into this thing in a great way because they threw you into the deep end. And what's that old phrase? Jump out of a plane and build your parachute on the way down. That's how you started.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
No, it's great, especially because, you know, your philosophy when that time comes, you're that head coach. You've built a lot, I'm sure, with the people that you have been around, the coaches that you have worked under, have played for. And, I mean, your father being a coach as well, at least you've already had, like, somewhat of a voice or at least seen it growing up. Now you're in a bunch of – or with a bunch of different – coaches building your own philosophy. You've definitely got a great background to be able to help lead you into being a head coach someday.
Sure.
So let's talk on the current role, right? The DOBO, Director of Basketball Operations.
Before we do that, we're talking about influencing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Coach Mazzullo. You know, obviously my dad, great high school coach, and he always tells everybody when I was 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, to get me up for school in the morning, he would come in there and wake me up and say, hey, we're going to practice. That was the only way to get me out of bed, to get me to go to school. I would wake up thinking we were going to practice, and then he'd stick me on the school bus to go. So obviously he had a huge piece of influence. He had major influence on my decision-making and what I wanted to do long-term. But we talked about Dwayne Osborne earlier. And when you talk about influence on a person, Dwayne Osborne has as much influence on me as any single human being in my life, in my professional and personal life. Dwayne was the first person, and Coach Calhoun and Coach Molinari and Coach Mazzullo, obviously I spent a ton of time with those guys, and they helped me tremendously. Coach Osborne was the first person that spent, I shouldn't say the first, outside of Joe and my pops. He was the one person that spent genuine and intentional time with me on me. All right. So I tell the story to a lot of people. When I interviewed, so I left Fairmont, graduated, got my degree at Fairmont, was leaving to go to the University of Charleston. When I interviewed with Coach Osborne, he set me down in his office and he said, this is not going to be your standard typical interview. I called 20 people and asked them what they thought about Sid Crist. And here's what they told me. Some of these people you would consider to be your friend. Some of these people you would consider to be acquaintances. Some of these people you don't know necessarily, but you know who each other are. And here's what they said about you. And for the next 90 minutes, I sat there and got crushed. He just obliterated me, like what all these people said about me. And I had a previous relationship with him because of my dad. We went to team camp at Glenville when he was the head coach at Glenville way back in the day in the early mid 2000s. And so I'd known him for a really long time, but like leaving there that day, I knew that I had to go work for him because he cared about me enough before I ever really knew him.
Yeah. Yeah.
To tell me all those uncomfortable things about myself. Mm. And for the next year, like weekly, he met with me and he taught me the importance of detail, and DTE talks about all the time, detail, thorough, and excellent. Like, he taught me that. That is something that it's written on my wall right next to my desk. He was a major part. Without him, and maybe that interview, without him for that guidance for those 9 months or whatever it was, months that I worked for him. And then even still today, I talk to him weekly, a couple times a week, some weeks every day for a week. Without that influence, I certainly would not be sitting here talking to you guys.
Wow. That's amazing.
I am grateful to that dude for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I can see why. No, that makes sense. What, to cover everything he said in the 90 minutes? But what was the overriding thing that maybe you felt might have been an issue or a challenge that he covered? And maybe it was a common theme among everything. Sure. But what was the thing that was most eye-opening that made you say, wow, I never thought about that, or I didn't realize that?
There are a lot of things. I think the thing that he made me understand, and that when you're something he used to tell me, and we still talk about all the time, and I think it's hilarious just the way that it's transpired. What's important to you when you're 22 is going to be different when you're 25. And what's important to you when you're 25 is going to be different when you're 30, and when you're 35 and 50 and what down the line, things change. And at that point in time in my life, I didn't really care what anybody thought about me. And I don't necessarily care today what people think about me necessarily. But I don't want to say something stupid or offensive to someone and have that negative perception that they have, because their perception is their reality, right? Yeah, that's something right. The overlying message of that entire 90 minutes was that regardless of what is true or not, this is what people think. And it's going to be hard for you to work in this business if this is what they think. And not everybody is your friend. Not everybody is someone that you can trust. Not everybody is someone that you can rely on. Like, my circle, as I've gotten older in this business, has gotten smaller and smaller and smaller. And part of that is because, like for me personally, like, people outside of working for a bunch of really good coaches, and I'm sure we'll get into that later on, but outside of that piece, there's really no reason to hire me. Like, I'm from a super small town. There's maybe 5 college basketball players in my high school's history. I wasn't a great player. Like, it's the middle of nowhere, West Virginia. I love it there. I'm so proud of the place that I'm from, but there's no ties to college basketball. There's none of that. And so as I've gotten older, like, the people that hire me and the people that have taken chances on me, like, those are the people that are in my circle. Those are the people that I trust. And so that circle has just gotten smaller over time, even though I've worked for more people. It's just those people that I mess with. And that not everybody's your friend, and the perception of who you are to other people is their reality. And so trying to remember that when you come across whoever it is, whether it's a JUCO coach that you recruit one of his kids, or it's John Calipari at Arkansas when we go there and play him in November this year, it doesn't matter who it is, like, somebody may remember you, and you want that to be positive.
Yeah, no doubt, man. And shout out to West Virginia. We got D.R.A. Goodwin on our roster out here. Okay. Great young man. Went to Lindsley School out there, West Virginia. So great kid.
No, that's great to say, though, because everything that you had just covered talks about your not only your connections and your network, but how you got a job or how you could have lost that job before you even sat down with Coach Osborne. Like, you could have he could have not even brought you in because they said all these negative things. And it's like, why would I even bring him in? He has X, Y, and Z to his name. I don't want him as an assistant. But that is another thing too, is that's one of the toughest things to do. And I feel personally is have someone sit you down and tell you the negatives and the positives, but the negatives against yourself, because half the time you don't see any of them. All you're the positives. Nobody wants to see the negatives in them. Sure. So that's the toughest thing. So for someone to call you out on that, one, that's a true friend, but then that's also, that's one of those turning moments of, okay, are you able to take that? And if so, are you going to actually work at it too? Because sure, some people can take it and then they just turn a page. You're like, yeah, whatever. But then actually working at it is a different thing. That's great. That's phenomenal.
And it sounds like he partnered with you on it. So he didn't leave you on an island. Like, he could have told you all mm-hmm. that stuff and then left you on an island. But he actually partnered with you. So like Joe Mazzulla, you said he wouldn't let you do it. So it was Coach Osborne almost did the same thing in his own way. I'm not going to tell this guy all this stuff and then just leave him hanging and hope it works out. Like, he partnered with you on it, which says, more about him.
And that's something that I think for people listening to this podcast, like, there's everybody listens to these things trying to learn something new or come up with something that can help them. And if you're a head coach listening to this, like, Dwayne Osborne is exactly who everyone should want to be as a head coach. Like, that dude meets with every single person in his program for at least 30 minutes a week when he was a head coach at Charleston. And that may not seem like 30 minutes, but there's 15 players, there's two or three staff members. That's a lot of time. And you're doing that every week. And the majority of the time when you go in there and sit down and meet with him, it's not about basketball. He's meeting with you on something that you told him was a personal goal of yours and how he can help you achieve that goal, or how's your family, to whatever it is, like building real relationships. And I would urge everyone that is listening to this, if you spend genuine time with people, they're going to appreciate it. And they're going to take that time. That time won't be taken lightly, I guess I should say.
Yeah, no, that's so true, man. So true.
No, and I can even say too, like, I don't have anywhere near the relationship that you do with Coach Osborne or just him in particular. But the times that I've hit him up, reached out to him, like, I was like, hey, sorry to bother. He goes, you're not a bother. And then he just continued the conversation, like little things like that. And just, I'm just talking from the full spectrum too. Whenever someone reaches out, there's so many times where somebody will reach out and you're like, I don't want to answer this text. But it's then at the same point, you were at that stage at one point. I'm still technically at that stage, that young coach trying to learn, trying to grow. And you get those people who reach out to you. I shouldn't say you have to. It helps to reach out to them and give them as much feedback as possible. Yeah, it's time consuming, but at the same point, it'll help them out in the long haul, and it means a lot more to them than it does you.
Sure.
Kind of transition, I do want to talk about the Dobo role a little bit, just because that is, one, it is the great role that a lot of people looking to get into coaching eventually get into, right? It's one of those roles that, one, it's a lot of people call the backbone of a program, because you're the one doing all the back end stuff that a lot of people don't see, that a lot of things that don't happen on the court. Now you're able to get on the court at least, which is nice. But just give us a full encompass of the director of basketball operations role. I know there's so much and things change on a day-to-day basis for you, but from someone looking on the outside in, how would you explain a Dobo role to somebody?
I would explain it as the planner and fixer of all things.
That's a great
way to put it. Good.
Now, you guys are the Michael Clayton of the program. Remember, I don't know, you probably, it's an older movie, but it was a movie called Michael Clayton, played by George Clooney. And he was like the guy that if somebody did something went down in the middle of the night, especially a person that's popular or powerful person, and they got themselves into something, that they would call him and he'd be standing in their kitchen at 2 a.m, like trying to figure out a way to get it done. But like, you're right. Literally, that was the first conversation I had every day was with my ops person, because you literally got to keep a fingerprint on a finger pulse on everything that's going on.
It's been difficult for me. I was an associate coach at University of Pikeville last year and was an assistant there for 4 years previous to that, and a graduate assistant 2 years previous to that. And for the last 5 years, I've been coaching defense, and scouting and recruiting has been the everyday things when I walk through the door. So retraining myself to get back into some of this ops world has been difficult. And when you're at that level, when you're at NAI and Division IIs, there's not a bunch of people. So, you know, and when I say a bunch of people in the staff, right? At the University of Pikeville, you're the associate coach, but you're also the financial aid director, and you're also the housing coordinator, and you're the ops guy, and you've got your hands into every piece of it. And early on in my time at Fairmont, I watched Coach Molinari dominate everything administrative. Like, he knew all the financial aid stuff. He knew all the housing stuff. And so, like, I just tried to learn all that stuff. Like, I saw how valuable that was. Like, if you asked Jared Calhoun, he would tell you he's the most valuable person in college basketball. Paul Molinari is. And so I, like, model myself after that a little bit. Let's just learn every single thing we can learn about everything non-basketball related. Like, all of us, everyone in on our staff here, everyone on every Division One staff, Division Two, whatever, like, everybody knows basketball. Everybody knows how to coach defense. Everybody knows how to do a full court shooting drill. Like, everybody knows how to do that stuff. But for me, it was like, okay, if I can know that stuff and also know how financial aid works, know how the housing system works at whatever college I'm at, if I can learn those things, it's just going to make me more valuable. And everywhere that I've been, I've tried to immerse myself in to the on-campus administrative piece. And that's only helped me, and it helped me getting this job too, knowing financial aid deadlines and how to fill out the FAFSA and whatever else. It's valuable. It's valuable. It seems mindless a little bit, but it's valuable.
I'm glad you were transparent enough to say that it was challenging, because a lot of times people see guys at the Division I level, or even listeners of this pod, they'll think that if a guy is at, or a lady is at, the Division I level, that it's just all as peaches and cream, and they see you on TV or ESPN Plus and like, oh man, that's so great, I wish I was. And they don't realize, hey, everybody's got battles, everybody's got hurdles. But I'm glad you shared personally that it was challenging for you, because literally you go from having your hands in everything and you're on the court, you know, you're planning out to chill thing you're going to do every day, and now you've had the shift, and I'm sure they probably allow you to be on the court now.
Sure.
With the, because the rules changes, which is great. But just talk about how you rearranged your thinking so that didn't, that challenge of what you talked about just being difficult, how that, because that could have festered on.
Yeah.
And now it affects how you do your job daily there. So how do, you know, how did you rewire your brain so you could just keep plugging forward? Because that's a big deal. Everybody, I think people really learn a lot.
I think that I've not totally rewired my brain yet. Like, I tell these guys all the time, hey, I think I freaking suck at this. Once I realized what a daunting task it is when the rewiring started. When you're at the University of Pikeville and you're traveling to wherever, you know, we're going to play Georgetown College, for example. Like, you get the bus, you need the bus to be here at this time, you get 12 hotel rooms and a couple meals and that's it. Like, when you're doing that, you got to get a bus to take you. When you're going to play Arkansas, you got to get a bus to take you, to take 30 people, not 20 people, from here to the airport and drop you off. You got to have plane tickets for 30 people. You got to get bags on the airplane, and then you got to get a bus to pick you up when you get there, and you've got to get 15 or 16 hotel rooms or 18 hotel rooms for this party, and you're coordinating all those things. And so I probably didn't realize until I got here and got into it, I didn't realize what a big operation it actually is.
Yeah. And then that was probably humbling, which triggered the rewiring, I'm sure.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. No, so you got a lot of work to do here. It took me a couple of weeks once I first got here. And this move for me was, it's the first time in my career that I've worked with people that I didn't know. I went to Paramount State with Missoula, and then Dwayne hired me. I'd known Dwayne and to work for Jack Merriweather at West Virginia Wesleyan, and got to know him really well through scouting and recruiting stuff when we were both assistants in that league. And went to work at University of Pikeville for Kelly Wells, who's now the AD at Morehead State, and Ty Compton, who's now the head coach there, and him and Evan Faulkner were on staff there. And I'd known those guys for a couple of years previous to that. And so this has been a totally new experience for me. And the last thing you want to do is get to a place and then let the people that gave you a job down because you didn't do as good of a job as what you could do, because it's just a totally new deal and you're entering a new role and you've got to rework everything that you've done from a, like, the way that we did things at Pikeville. Like, we don't do anything that way here. That doesn't mean it was wrong necessarily. They just have their own systems, and these guys have been together for years and years at Carolina, and they have their systems and the way that they do things. And so learning, like, everything, like, literally every single piece of it's different. Like, basketball, I've learned an entirely new vocabulary from a basketball perspective. Mm-hmm. And just immersing yourself into that and trying to become one of them rather than being the person that you were when you were at your last spot. You got to find that fine line.
Yeah.
Said. Wow. That's the one tough thing I will say from going from one coach to the next. So I was fortunate to be able to be retained. We got a new head coach at the university I'm at. But doing the scouting reports, like, he came in, new head coach. I've talked to him, had conversation with him. We even had him on a podcast, but then I never really knew him to a personal extent. We bring him in. Now the whole scouting reports are completely different. And it's like he has a way of doing it. The lingo, some of the vocabulary is different. It's cool for me because you get to learn a different side. But then to your point, it's also tough to be able to rewire your brain in one thing, but now you have to call it a different thing and you have to make sure you are consistent with that because they want consistency. A lot of coaches want consistency in what you do on or off the floor. So yeah, that's a great point. It's just having to rewire your brain for a completely new way of doing things, even though you're doing the same exact thing. So let me ask, what kind of skills? Now, I know you cover a few of them there, and a lot of what you had said is making sure you are on top of things and being organized, I know is one thing, because as you said, you have to make sure like the hotels, the buses, the planes, the trips, all that stuff, the food, everything has to be completely organized and laid out. But if somebody were going to be getting into a adobo role tomorrow or next year, what advice would you tell them, like skill-wise, this is what you should develop in order to be successful in this role?
Yeah, obviously you have to be organized. I think emotional intelligence is important because there is going to be chaos. And if you are freaking out and spazzing out when there's chaos surrounding you, then everybody else is going to spaz that out. And they are also going to be freaking out. And then you got to be obsessed about the details of it. Like there are going to be things that pop up that there's nothing you can do. You just can't control it. And so when that happens, you get out of trying to control it and figure out how to fix it. An example of that would be we were flying back from Texas Tech on a charter. And they had like an issue in trying to land the plane here in Rock Hill. Like the visibility was bad or something. I don't know the whole deal. They had something called an ILS system. I'm not going to get on here and try to act like I know a bunch about planes, but for whatever reason, we couldn't get down in Rock Hill. And so they diverted us to Columbia, South Carolina, which is like an hour away. And so just in that moment, rather than freaking out and arguing with the pilot and the flight attendant about why we can't do it, let's just figure out how we're going to get back to Rock Hill as quickly as we possibly can. Yeah, you got to be organized. You have to be calm. You have to be obsessed with the details. And then in today's world, you have to be able to do basketball things too. Like I think that was a piece of me getting this job was that I had real coaching experience and had been running a defense and had been recruiting all the players and whatever else. Like you have to be able to do those things as well. So as the rules have changed, I think what people are looking for in their ops guys are also changing.
Yeah, no doubt. That's well said. Because that used to be just a planner mode only, and you couldn't do anything on the floor and practice going on. You might be in the office for an hour and a half during practice handling stuff. Right?
And I'm lucky enough here. Like, obviously, I'm new and whatever else, but eat what you kill. Like, Coach Pross and these guys are fantastic. They're great coaches, and they're great to work for and great to work with. But it's an eat what you kill type of mindset around here. And I'm involved with as much as I want to be involved with in the basketball piece. And it's been great. The whole thing's been great.
So let me ask, how'd you get back home? Did you have to call a local bus company?
The bus was waiting for us in Rock Hill. He was already there. And so thankfully, when we were trying to land, I got just enough cell phone service to text the bus driver to say, hey, I know we're going to be waiting for an hour or whatever, but go ahead and start heading towards Columbia. And when we get there, I'll send you an address. The text went through, and then as soon as we landed, I got cell phone service again where he had responded and said, hey, he was on his way. We ended up at some small airport, some small private airport in Columbia, and we just sat in their little office or whatever, waiting until the bus got there. And so it ended up being fine, but sometimes there's just nothing you can do sometimes.
How much did that?
Here's what I'd say. Something else too. As an ops guy, you are – constantly relying on some person that you don't know, you've never seen, that you just have a phone number for on the other end of that phone. Like you're just trusting that they're going to do what they're supposed to do. And if there's anybody listening to this that's not in coaching, like following instruction is a freaking skill. And if you can follow instruction, you can work in any industry, any of them. But you just have to trust that people are going to do what they said that they're going to do. And it always doesn't work out that way.
Yeah. And
one thing.
Their sense of urgency is almost never the same as yours. So, you have a sense of urgency.
Never the same.
And then they have a definition of theirs. But theirs could be like, yeah, he called on Friday. I'll get back to him on Monday. So, no, I need you to hit me in 30 minutes here. Because what I need is for Sunday. So, it can't wait till Monday.
Sure. Yeah, every other industry, like, there is off time. And this industry, you're never off necessarily. There's downtime and there's times where you're not required to be present, whatever else, but you're always on. There's never a time when you're just off.
I have a prime example of, we were going on a bus trip, quick scrimmage in the beginning of the season. We have to drive somewhere, go pick up food. My coach is, food's ready, everything's scheduled. I'm like, yes. I always make sure, because I've had a mistake before where the food didn't arrive at the right time. So now I make sure to have actual confirmation, the actual receipt, so that if it's not ready, I have, look, they screwed up. This is like, at least you can prove I have everything I needed to do. You make sure everything's tailored out. I make sure to put everything in emails now. But my point in saying this is, I did all of that and a company still messed up the food. They didn't have it ready. And then it all ends up coming falling on me. And it's just, you have to wear it. It's like, I made sure everything was lined out. The company didn't fall through, but you still got to find an alternative of, okay, hey, like, how can we get around this? But let me ask you this. How much of that plane ride, that hour detour, were you freaking out?
When they first told me we weren't going to be on land in Rock Hill, it's like, what are we going to do? My first thought process, the first thing popped in my head was, there are two colleges in Columbia, South Carolina that were in our league at Pikeville, Columbia International and Columbia College. And the first thing that popped in my mind was, let me see if I can get on the phone with one of the head coaches at those places to see if they can get me vans that I can drive. We can drive these guys from Columbia back. Thankfully, the bus driver was great, and he just left and came and picked us up. But I've worked – there have been some of these guys that I've worked for that have been a little more tightly bound.
You can say it.
And so the freak outs, I just don't really freak out about it anymore. Like, it's gonna work out, it'll be just fine.
Yeah,
it's two words that we say it all the time to our players. We say it in every 15 times of practice, at least. You say it 30 times every game, but it's the two words that literally transfer from the court to ops: next play.
Yeah, no doubt.
Right. No doubt. Things can go great, and you're still like, next play, because like you're thinking about that next thing that you got to do, or something goes haywire like that Columbia bus trip that you guys were headed a different direction. The bus is sitting somewhere else. You're trying to make this as – how can you make this as seamless as possible? Well,
yeah, I've had a few of those. There was a time – it would have been 2019-20. Let me think about that, 1920 season, we were going to play South Alabama in an exhibition game at Pikeville. That Richie Riley was an assistant for Coach Wells, for Kelly Wells at Pikeville, and it was Coach Wells' last year. And so we went down, we played South Alabama in an exhibition game, and we're driving from Pikeville to South Alabama. I don't even remember, it's 12 hours or whatever, it's so far. And we get 5 hours into the trip, and the bus driver turns around, looks at me, he's like, hey, where are we staying tonight? And I'm like, Mobile, Alabama. And he's, I'm going to run out of time. I'm going to run out of hours. And I'm like, no, I've got it right here. Like, you supposed to have a pickup, a drop off, whatever. And then another driver's going to get on the bus and take us the rest of the way, whatever. And so he's like, yeah, I mean, we didn't do that. So he starts calling the dispatch people and they can't get anything worked out. And so I just get on the phone and I start finding like different bus companies or whatever. And I find this party bus company, and I think it was Alabama, I think. And I just call and like tell this dude, hey, like we got to get to Mobile. We're going to be at this place, at this Walmart, at whatever time. Like, do you guys have a bus that can drive us to Mobile and drop us off? And the guy's not very buttoned up. I was a little bit nervous. He's like, yeah, no problem. We'll have somebody meet you there, whatever. So like,
right. He may have just finished a bachelorette party or something.
That's fact. So like, we get there and there's this 30 passenger party bus waiting on us. There's a disco ball in it, there's a karaoke machine, flashing strobe lights, like all this different stuff. And so we just climb, like everybody on the bus just climbs on this party bus, and we drove like the last three hours of the trip, on this freaking party bus. I got dudes on there karaoke and Luke Combs and Waka Flocka and whatever else.
Actually, probably helped you.
Yeah, no doubt. I was a nervous wreck. I was sick. I was sick to my stomach about that. Like, I ain't got hotel rooms. I don't know where we're at, whatever. And then this random Ford party bus picks us up and takes us the rest of the way. And then the bus driver drove down the next morning and everything was fine.
No, that's
– hopefully this it was a win.
We got smacked by South Alabama.
That's going to be a rough one, because especially seeing everybody all happy on a party bus, and it's just like, that definitely isn't probably making the head coach the happiest.
Yeah, no.
But the big thing of it is, everything you just said was the win, in a sense. Like, just being able to sometimes make these situations work.
Yeah, you got to be able to move on the fly.
That alone is a win. Like, you, certain games, depending on the opponent, it's going to be hard to beat certain people. But sometimes if things can just move along seamlessly, and you probably think this way, and it probably helps you be effective, is every decision you make, is this best for the staff and players, especially sure. players? What's going to make this best for our guys? Whether it's a travel decision, a food decision, a bus decision, like all that stuff. Thankfully, they were able to at least have something to take their minds off that last that last few hours. It turned it into a little party themselves. Good stuff.
Well, Coach Crist, we want to first off thank you for being on here, giving us some of your time, availability. I know it's busy season for you. So, one, thank you very much. It was great to connect with you. Great to meet you, hear your story. I'm sure there's a lot more that we could dive into because it sounds like you got a lot of interesting stories. But nonetheless, it was definitely good to be able to get to meet you. Like I said, I know I've heard a lot of great things about you from Coach O, but it's good to officially meet you, and thank you for taking some time.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you, guys.
No, this was awesome, man.
And for all you coaches out there, thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. All, as always, Alan Major, Doug Caputo, keep working, keep rising, coaches. We'll see you all soon. Take care.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.